or teachers. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 46 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 33 degrees and overcast. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Banger-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago, and you are tuned in to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. I have the honor of having the co-founders of D.C. Kin Care on the show today with us. I'm joined by Marla Spindell. She is the executive director. I'm also joined by Stephanie McClellan, who is the deputy director. Welcome you both to the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hi, it's nice to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Now, why don't we start off by just giving us a little history on D.C. Kin Care. You know, why was it founded? Why did you both feel as a co-founders that there was a need for an organization like D.C. Kin Care?
Sure. This is Marla. I was a co-founder of another organization about 10 years prior called D.C. Volunteer Lawyers Project. And I ran the child advocacy practice for 10 years. And doing that work, I recognized the unmet need of relative caregivers that stepped up to take care of DC children in times of crisis when the parents weren't able to take care of them. And I would notice these caregivers who would be taking care of the children that we were representing at DC Volunteer Lawyers Project, and they didn't have any representation. They didn't know what their legal rights were, and they didn't have help to access services and benefits to ensure the safety of those children that they took in. So I decided to branch off and start a separate organization called DC Kin Care Alliance, which Stephanie and I started about 3 years ago. And I was working with Stephanie at DC Volunteer Lawyers on a case where we were representing children. I was supervising her, and we started talking about these issues, and, you know, then, long story short, we decided to go ahead and go out and start this organization and see if we could help caregivers.
Wonderful. Stephanie, anything to add?
Yeah, I just really commend Marla for noticing that this was an issue when she was representing children, and I'm so grateful that she asked me to be a part of this fantastic organization. It's been a wonderful 3 years and just really great to be able to meet all of these wonderful relative caregivers who step up to raise DC children when their parents can't in really difficult situations, like when a parent is lost to gun violence or incarceration or has mental health or substance use issues that prevent them from taking care of a child. The relative caregivers that step up to care for these DC children do it with not a lot of financial or physical resources, but just with a lot of love in their hearts.
That's right. No, thank you for that. And now I think we could glean the mission, but if you would talk a little bit, either of you or both, about the mission, kind of what does the work look like?
Sure. This is Marla. So it is sort of, it is holistic in its breadth. Even though we're small, there's just 3 lawyers that work with the organization right now. We're very efficient and nimble, and we've been able to help over 350 caregivers, raising over 450 children in just the 3 years we've been in existence. Uh-huh. And the work looks like we are lawyers, and we're a legal services organization. So we represent caregivers in DC court to gain custody of the children that they're raising. We also provide more limited representation, such as we have a helpline, which I'll give you that number. If you're a caregiver raising a DC child, that number is 202-505-5803. And that's a number you can call, and we can give you what's called brief legal advice, where you tell us about your situation. We have an attorney-client relationship during the call. Everything you tell us is confidential, and we give you legal advice as to what your options are, whether your case is strong, what we think your next step should be, and then we may also provide some additional representation after that. It could result in a full representation in court. It could result in us helping to a caregiver file different pleadings for their custody case. We also help caregivers to complete forms for benefits like TANF, SNAP, Medicaid, rental assistance. There's been a really increased need for help during COVID, as you can imagine, where caregivers prior to the pandemic, caregivers might need help with 3 types of benefits or 2 types of benefits, and now it's multiplied to 5 or 10 different things that they're going to need our help with. And so we've tried to pivot our operations not only to be virtual, but also to respond to those needs. So we've expanded our work into unemployment, into housing assistance, energy assistance, whatever our caregivers need, we try to help them either ourselves or find a place where we can give a warm handoff to another organization that can help them. So that's, and we also have a community advisory board, which is made up of 18 relative caregivers raising 23 DC children. And I want to give a shout out to them because I know a lot of them are listening today, and we're really excited that we were able to talk with you today.
Yes, no, that's great. And I mean, there certainly seems to be a lot of need in the city when, you know, we have high poverty rates. We've got, you know, DC historically has had very high incarceration rates. So a definite need for the services that you all provide. Stephanie,
and I think I forgot to mention, Stephanie, maybe you want to talk about our advocacy work and our impact litigation?
Sure. I think one of the things I love best about working with Marla at DC Kin Care Alliance is we do so many different things to help relative caregivers. And Marla talked a lot about the things we do to help individual caregivers with their legal rights and options and financial benefits that they might be entitled to. But we also try to do broader work for our relative caregivers as a whole, both with community education and with advocacy. With regard to advocacy, we testify before the DC Council at various oversight and budget hearings, advocating for better laws and policies to support relative caregivers. In fact, I think that's something we'll talk a little bit more about today, is both our testifying at oversight hearings and the opportunity for community members to testify. And then we also engage in impact litigation at a federal level to both help individual caregivers, but also to try to get better policies that are in compliance with the law for relative caregivers as a whole.
Great. Now, and as we, when we talked earlier in the week about the work that you are doing, one of the big things that came, and you mentioned it, you know, we are in the budget season. The council oversight hearings are beginning very shortly. You know, early spring, we will be in the thick of budget season with the hearings. And I know there was a subsidy that helps caregivers, relative caregivers, to you know, to be able to provide for the children in their care. Talk to us a little bit about that subsidy, and you know, what are you advocating on, and how folks can get involved?
Sure. So the Grandparent Caregiver Subsidy has been around for about 15 years, and the purpose is to assist relatives who step up to care for children when they are not in foster care. So these are grandparents that and other great aunts, great uncles, anyone in the grand level of caring for these children that step up to care for them when they're not going to be in foster care. But the council, when they established this law, recognized that these relatives were doing the same work as foster parents, but not getting any of the help, financial help to do so. And there's also a lot of research that shows that even a little bit of money can help people to overcome poverty, and especially children, and that this amount, this money can really make a major difference in the lives of these children. So that was the idea, and it was really revolutionary. I mean, it still is. There are very few other jurisdictions that have this kind of subsidy for relatives taking care of children not in foster care. So I definitely applaud the council for stepping up and establishing this law. We also advocated last year to have the law expanded to not only the grand level caregivers, but also other relatives who are caring for children, like aunts, uncles, adult siblings, and cousins. And one of our caregivers, an adult brother caregiver, testified last year and, really won the hearts of some of the council members, and they went ahead and expanded the program to include these other relatives, which is really amazing and awesome, and we were so excited about that. It does have a separate funding stream from the grandparent program, so that's why right today we're talking about advocacy for funding the grandparent program, because that program, even though it's been around for quite a while, it's never had a waiting list. And it's had its first waiting list for over the last year, starting at the end of 2019, and there's still a waiting list today. So more grand families are getting on the program or trying to apply for the program. There's definitely a push in child welfare to have children stay with their families and not be placed in foster care. As a result of that policy shift, many children that would otherwise be in foster care are being placed with relatives by the child welfare agency. And also with COVID, there's also an increase of the need for relatives to step up. So the need for this program has increased exponentially. And so ultimately, with every year, the numbers going up that have been recipients of the program until this past year where there's a waiting list. And at last count, we understand the end of 2020, which is when we have our last numbers from the Child and Family Services Agency that administers the program, there were 45 families on the grandparent caregiver program waiting list, which means 65 children are waiting for the subsidy, and it is a per child amount that's paid.
Yeah. And so there's the wait list, so we know there's a definite need for this subsidy, and just for this, you know, for relatives who are able to step up to get that extra support. Any numbers on like what the actual need is out there? You know, how many children are in either, you know, in the foster care system because, you know, they're either their relatives are unaware or simply can't afford, you know, the level of income that it needs to raise a child or children in the district. Any numbers out there?
Well, the numbers for children not in foster care, right, as of 2019, the Annie E. Casey Foundation Kids Count states that there are 9,000 D.C. children living in kinship care, which is defined as living with somebody other than a parent when and there's no parent in the home. So it could be a grandparent, could be another relative, could be a godparent or fictive kin. So 9,000 of those children, 7,000 of those are living just with grandparents with no parent present. We don't know the number of, there's some higher number of children that are living in sort of multi-generational families where you have grandparents or other relatives living with parents and their grandchildren. And we don't have the numbers for those, but and it's also not, we don't know whether those parents are involved in caring for those children either, even if they are in the home.
Well, so a definite need out there for the work that you all are doing, and of course the subsidy that the city currently provides for these programs. Now let's get into these actual oversight hearings. Who are the agencies you all will be targeting, you know, and how can folks get involved? What tips would you recommend for folks? You know, I mean, it's a process, right? And I think a lot of time folks are left out of the process because, especially now during COVID, you know, you have to call in, you have to register, you've got to kind of clear that day.
Right.
To give testimony, but walk us through that so folks who may be listening can reach out to you and see how they can support the work, the good work that you all are doing.
Sure. I'll give sort of the nuts and bolts of how to sign up, and I'll let Stephanie talk about the experience of doing that and what we do to help caregivers to prepare, because she's sort of the guru on that. So just the nuts and bolts are there's a Committee on Human Services Agency Performance Oversight Hearing, which the Committee on Human Services of the Council oversees the Child and Family Services Agency, which I said administers these both of these programs, the grandparent program and the close relative caregiver program. And that hearing will be February 25th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and to sign up, if you want to testify, you have three choices. You can submit written testimony and email humanservices@dccouncil.us if you just want to submit written testimony, which must be submitted within a week after the hearing date to become part of the record. You also can submit voicemail testimony. So you could call this number, which is 202-350-1927, 202-350-1927, and you can state your name and what agency, because the Committee on Human Services oversees other agencies too, so make sure you tell them that you're testifying with respect to the Child and Family Services Agency, and then go ahead and provide your testimony by voicemail. It will be limited to 3 minutes, and it will also become part of the official record. If you want to actually testify live, which we would definitely recommend if you have the time and ability to do so, that's really the way to get the attention of the council members, because they're there that day. They're listening to you, and they'll ask you questions. And they may even ask you to follow up with them afterwards with their offices. So if you're able to, testifying live is really the way to do it. And if you want to do that, you can either fill out a form that's at www.briannknado.com, which is BRIANNEKNADEAU.com/testify, or you can call 202-724-8170 by close of business 4 days before the hearing, before February 25th. And let them know that you want to testify live at the hearing. Once you do that, they'll send you information about how to log in and provide your testimony. Again, you'll be limited to 3 minutes. And I'll pass it over to Stephanie to give you the realities of what it's like to testify and what we also do to help people prepare for that.
Yeah, and if I may just add, because, we have a lot of experience with this too, the sooner you sign up, most likely the higher up you'll be on the witness list. So just a tip for other folks out there too, it does pay off sometimes to register as early as possible. Thank you for that, Marla. Stephanie?
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to say is that the language around testifying can sound intimidating, but I don't want anyone out there listening to feel intimidated. When you talk about testifying or being a witness, I think sometimes people think of court hearings and being cross-examined, like on television, and it's not like that at all. It's just a formal way of talking to the people who represent us. And it's important to remember that these are folks who work for us, the people who live and work in the district. So it's important for them to hear from us. And what it's like is when it's your turn, you are told, and you also get visual cues on how long you have to talk and how long you have left. There are lights, and you're told as the time counts down. And you prepare ahead of time, so you write out what you want to say, and you just read that into the record. And when you're done, then, like Marla said, the council members can ask you questions, and they're usually really glad to hear from constituents and want to know how things are being received. It's an experience that I think has been really empowering for clients that we have had who have chosen to testify. We've absolutely seen it make a difference, specifically with regard to getting the grandparent caregiver subsidy expanded to other relative caregivers. And the council is definitely wants to, I think both be perceived as and genuinely really wants to hear from people and also know sort of common sense how things are working on the ground and are very receptive to those kind of common sense arguments. What we do in helping folks prepare for testimony is we just sit and listen to what people have to say and help them put that in written format so that they can express what they want to say clearly. And our experience is that people find that it's easier than they think it's going to be. And then you just, you know, practice timing yourself reading it to make sure it's under 3 minutes, and then you do it. So I would highly encourage people who are considering doing that, and if there are relative caregivers out there who want help signing up for and crafting their testimony, please give us a call. And again, our legal helpline number is 202-505-5803, and that is how to reach us.
So that's wonderful, and I agree with both of you 100%. I mean, I think, you know, it's been my experience that, you know, there's folks like us more on the advocacy side who the council members know. They know us, and you know,
right.
We are doing our best to work on behalf of residents. But it's so important to have people who are directly affected by these issues, because then the council can really see there is a need. It's not just, you know, Marla, Stephanie, Daniel, whoever it may be, you know, kind of on our side, asking for, you know, more investment or for certain improvements with the agencies. I think it's so important, as you underscored, to have people who are directly affected be there and giving testimony. And you know, it's a good way to establish relationships with these council members, right? It makes it easier to get a follow-up meeting, as you mentioned. It makes it easier, you know, for them to recognize you the next time you're giving testimony. They'll know your name. They'll know your issue. And I think, you know, it's so important for, you know, all residents to get involved around, you know, this issue. But also, you know, this is the opportunity. This is the time of year where we do get a platform to speak directly to the city council and raise up our demands and our concerns. Now, with that, what are the demands that you all will be asking for this coming year, you know, both through the oversight hearings and the budget hearings that are coming up?
So with respect to the grandparent subsidy, obviously we've been asking for this for the last year, that the council fully fund the program so that they can eliminate the waiting list. And we are hopeful that the council will do that this year. We actually submitted a question to Chairman Mendelson last night on his Meetup with Mendo Facebook Live function, and asked him what he thought about the grandparent caregiver waiting list and if he was supportive of fully funding it and eliminating the waiting list, and he said he was supportive of that. So we're hopeful that he will follow through on what he said about that, and we know that Councilmember Nay Doe has been a big champion for relative caregivers. We thank her for all of her support. And we know she's supportive of fully funding the program. So hopefully the mayor will also see the necessary need for this. The program actually saves DC, the DC government, millions and millions of dollars a year in foster care payments that they don't have to pay, because these relatives are stepping up to do this hard work at no cost to the city. And even if you take into account the amount that they get, which is about $500 a month on average, that's about half the foster care rate. Plus, there's no bureaucracy. There's no social workers that have to be paid. There's no court case. Everything is on the backs of these relatives who don't have savings and don't have, you know, the ability to care for these children without some sort of help. According to the annual report put out by CFSA, 75% of grandparents on the program are recipients of TANF. 75% live in Ward 7 and 8. And 98% are African American. And that also correlates to our client base, where most of the relatives that are caring for children live in Ward 7 or 8, and they're typically female, African-American, Black, women that are stepping up to do this. So this subsidy makes a major difference in the lives of these kinship families and in the lives of these children. As I said, research shows at the bottom of all of the problems that we see in our society, it all comes down to poverty. If we can eradicate that, that can make such a difference in all of the other wrongs and ills and problems that we have. And so what we're asking for is that the council fully fund this program. According to Brenda Donald, the director of the Child and Family Services Agency, when she testified regarding the budget last year, she said it would take about $800,000 to fully fund it, to get rid of the waiting list. And I'll actually let Stephanie talk about an egregious situation that happened with respect to MPD funding and how that actually impacted the funding for the for this subsidy. Did you want to tell him about that, Stephanie?
Sure. So last fall, D.C. had a budget shortfall, and the mayor reprogrammed funds from other agencies in order to pay for the Metropolitan Police Department overtime, that they had overspent their budget and needed money to pay MPD officers their overtime. So it was about $20 million. Or 25, I can't remember, but a lot of it came from other places, but 2 million of that money came from what was considered to be extra funding at CFSA, funding that wasn't being used otherwise.
Wow.
So $2 million in CFSA's budget went to pay for MPD overtime when it would only have taken $800,000 to get grandparent caregivers off the waiting list and be supporting these children and in a way that would at least lift them above the poverty line. I don't know that frustrates you or our listeners, but it really frustrates me. And
I think
Marla
that's
feels the same way.
That's the right word, frustrating. And you know, and now we're finding out that there is a surplus actually in the city's coffers. So you know, there really it appears there was not a need to cut so many critical programs like the one we're speaking of.
Right.
So yeah, I think
and
once again,
CFSA
it's so
tends
important.
To underspend its budget every year. So again, what is where's all this money going? And why
exactly.
are they ensuring it's going to
folks, you
that are
tuned
really
in
necessary.
To Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Bielago, and we are speaking to the co-founders of D.C. KinCare. And we've been hearing about what the program does, what they are engaging in now. And we should have on the air now or on the line Michelle Hamilton, who is a relative caregiver. She's a grandparent, and she has several children in her care. I thought it'd be important to bring her on just to hear her viewpoint, as somebody who has stepped up to care for children. So Marla and Stephanie, if you would stay on the line, let's just hear a little bit from Michelle. Michelle, are you on the line?
I can hear you, but not that clear.
Okay, well, let's see if we can do the best we can. We apologize, folks. We are doing all of this remotely, but I am going to try to speak up so Michelle can hear us. Michelle, tell us a little bit about your background. Ever since I've met Michelle, I've seen her rolling with a crew of children, either, her relative children, her blood, or children that she steps up to care for. So I know that's in your heart and in your spirit. But talk to us about your situation, how you've had to step up to take care of some of your grandchildren.
Well, during the holidays, I had to get six of my grandkids. Two of them already live with me. I have custody of two of my boys, the 7-year-old and the 14-year-old. And now I have temporary custody of the 6 other grandkids from down Georgia and also Wisconsin. Every day is a struggle, but we making it. I mean, when you live in a household with 11 people and 2 loaves of bread be gone in one day, you be like, how do I preserve this bread? And how do I make it work from the next day to the next day? But I'm glad the food bank's back opening and I get a little food stamps. And, you know, it's but as long as I got something, have something for them to eat and the heat and roof and cable on, I think we okay, but it's a struggle.
And why was it important for you? You know, why did you make that decision? And I think I understand, but I think it's important to raise that
I don't have a large family like everybody, and my mother's here. She's getting ready to be in a nursing home. I had to let her go in the hospital last week because I care for my elderly mother, too. She has bleeding on the brain, so it's nothing that's hurting her because she had it since 2019. But they taking her to rehab because she stopped walking and eating. But she's doing okay. She's eating a lot now. And they give her a center to Rockville. My mom and my her sister are both hospitalized, my aunt in hospice. And now she had to get the morphine drops, so nothing that we can do for her at home. But those are the last 2 elders. So I step up in the family to be the backbone like they were. Because we just only have a small family, and I try to keep all the family together, stop the kids from going in the system. Because we weren't put in the system, and I'm not letting them go in the system. So I have to deal with what I have to deal with to be a grandmother and a family member.
That's right. And, you know, like I said, I've always, Michelle has given testimony with us around Berry Farm. She's a former Berry Farm resident. And, you know, it's been times where we packed the hearing rooms with a bunch of kids, right, with the kids that you roll with. And I've always, you know, I have a lot of respect for you for stepping up that way. Because, you know, you've got to take care of yourself. You got to take, you know, just living in the district is not easy. It's expensive. Mm-hmm. And taking on the responsibility of, you know, several children, I think, you know, it's just so commendable. I want to get some reactions from Marla and Stephanie, but I'd like to ask you, Michelle, you know, what sort of support would you ask for from our city government? What do they have to do to support people like yourselves that are doing great work and making sure that our next generation, you know, has a chance, is being cared for?
We have to have more, like I'm a grandmother that is taking care of my kids. And also, I'm a great-grandmother. And we need more programs to help those seniors, as like myself, to get educated on how to work without children to make them be the future. And future for us to cope with our grandkids. Because, you know, sometimes this is a mental problem. Sometimes I break down. Sometimes I need to be strong. Sometimes I need a life coach to lift me up and keep me going, you know. And if it wasn't from news people and Empower DC and One DC and those places and organizations to teach me how to fight and be strong, I think I would be the weakest link. I think I wouldn't be as strong as I am today. Because they taught me how another way of living, the right way.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. I think it's so important that, you know, parents like yourself, you're a parent, get the support that you need. Marla, Aunt Stephanie, any reactions to Michelle's story? I'm sure you've heard similar stories, but any reactions?
Yeah, first of all, Michelle, you are a hero. Thank you so much for stepping up to care for so many of your grandchildren. That's amazing.
Thank you.
What you do every day. I was just wondering, this is Marla, do you get any grandparent subsidy for any of your grandchildren?
Yeah, I did it for 2, but Empower DC helped me with a GoFundMe page, and now we have another GoFundMe page up for my oldest 2 grandbabies, one in Georgia, and he's going to Georgia State, and one here, she's going to Trinity.
Okay. So the grandchildren that came into your care more recently, I think you said six more recently in your care, you do not get the grandparent subsidy.
No, I don't.
Okay. And did
I live off my Social Security check.
Okay. Did you apply for it on their behalf yet?
I applied for it on their behalf, but we are in the courts right now, so it's nothing that we can get for them right now through the courts until we finish court, like in March, our next court date in March.
So one thing I do want to make sure everybody knows is that you don't have to have a custody order to get the grandparent subsidy.
No, you don't.
You just have to prove that you're caring for the children and that the parents aren't in the household and that you are 200% or below of the poverty line. So if you do need help, you can definitely feel free to call us and we'll help you apply for those subsidies. Even though there is a waiting list, we still recommend that grandparents apply, so at least they would be lower down on the list than if they wait for it.
Although I'm already in the grandparents program, I don't have to go through all that. I just have to get the custody papers together and they can be added on. They don't have to wait. It's already in the making.
Okay, so if you applied for those other six, then it would be in the making. If you haven't applied and you only have it for the two, you still would need to file separate applications for the other six with the child and family.
We don't have to file separate.
Okay. So if you have any problems or issues, feel free to call our helpline. And
thank you.
Definitely consider testifying about the thing, your needs and what you need from the city.
I really appreciate that.
To hear that.
Yeah, we'll make sure to connect you offline.
Thank you, David.
I wanted to thank you again, Michelle. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon and, you know, sharing your story. I think it really underscores the need that there is for this subsidy and programs like the DC Teen Care Alliance. And if folks would like to support Michelle, you can reach out to us at Empower DC. You can go on our Facebook page. We'll be sharing ways that you can support her individually. But also, I agree, Michelle. I think, you know, you are a wonderful example of somebody that's stepping up and doing more than their share to ensure that our next generation is taken care of. So if you are able to testify at the upcoming hearings, that would be great. So we'll make sure to connect you with Marla and Stephanie to hopefully get some support with that. So thank you so much,
thank you.
For joining
I appreciate
us.
It. Thanks
okay,
meeting
you
guys.
Great day, and thank you,
you
for everything that you do.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Marla and Stephanie, thank you for joining us while we had that call or staying on the line while we had that call. I thought it was really important to lift up and, you know, somebody that who we know personally we've seen, step up and take care of her. As I mentioned, I always see Michelle with children. Always see her with children. Now she's got even, you know, more grandchildren that she's stepping up to take care of. I'm sure this is something you see quite often.
Absolutely. We definitely have a lot of relative caregivers that take in multiple children at a time.
Yeah.
Which can obviously be very overwhelming.
It's so important.
And often they just come with the clothes on their back, the children do. So they have to get furniture, clothing, food, feed the children, get them into school, get child care. It's a pretty overwhelming burden that they step up to do because they love their relatives.
That's right. No. And you know, I mean, I don't know enough about the foster care system, but I think if, this city makes it a priority to avoid, putting children in that system and the expenses that come along with it, as you explained earlier, you know, this the subsidy for parents, grandparents and other relatives to take care of children is so important. As I mentioned, folks, you are tuned into Taking Action. We are speaking with Marla Spindell, the executive director of DC Kin Care Alliance. We've also got on the line Stephanie McClellan, the deputy director. They are both the co-founders of DC Kin Care Alliance. Why don't you guys give out the number and your website really quick for those folks who may be joining the conversation late just so they know the work that you're doing and how they can get in contact with you.
Sure. So our hotline number for legal help for caregivers is 202-505-5803. And our website is www.dckincare.org. And that also has the helpline number and all, and as well as our resource guide and various forms and other information that might be helpful.
Great. This may be repetitive, but I think it's important, especially because, you know, not everybody tunes in sometimes for the full hour. If you would recap for us, you know, the work that you all are engaging in immediately through the budget and oversight process, if you would remind us those dates and, you know, how folks can, you just gave out the number, but, you know, the support that you all are able to provide in helping folks, you know, get to those hearings and then, of course, have some support in delivering their testimony.
Sure. So if you call our helpline, we can help caregivers who are raising DC children to draft their testimony and sign up for testifying at the oversight hearing, which the one that we've been talking about is the Committee on Human Services hearing that oversees Child and Family Services Agency, because that agency administers the Grandparent Caregiver Program. And we've been talking about the fact that there's been a waiting list for that program, and we would like the council and the city and the mayor to fully fund the program and eliminate the waiting list. The oversight hearing for that is February 25th. And so if you call our helpline at 202-505-5803, we'll be happy to help you sign up and draft your testimony. There's also budget hearings coming up. I don't have the date of that in front of me, but we can also provide that to you. That'll be in March or April. We also help people testify for other oversight, like for Department of Human Services. If you're a caregiver that's had issues with getting your TANF benefits or your housing voucher or we have a relative who's been having a lot of trouble with getting their unemployment benefits, we've been helping them to sign up for those oversight hearings, which are on different days and with different committees. But just as with this committee, they want to hear from residents and they want to hear what you have to say. So we're very happy to help with other issues and other areas that you want to voice and lift up your voices on with respect to those issues.
That's right. No, that's wonderful. And let me remind folks also that the mayor is having several budget forums this month. Actually, tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, she's having a senior budget engagement forum, which we know not all the relative caregivers are seniors, but certainly there is a good amount of those folks. So I know if you there is an Eventbrite link, which is super long, but I think if folks are able to search, you know, Mayor Muriel Bowser presents the 2021 Senior Budget Engagement Forum, you can register. And I think that's important, too, to have the mayor hear this and include it in her budget. So then we, you know, that's one hurdle we have to cross, is getting the mayor to include some of our priorities into her budget. And then, of course, have the council either supplement or make sure that that stays in the budget. So
absolutely.
I think they're important that we flag for those folks, for folks too as well. And as we begin to close out, I want to thank you both once again for the work that you do and for the time that you've spent with us. I think this information is not only important for people who, you know, who need this type of support, but just this general information on, you know, the importance of stepping up and giving testimony at these council hearings and just being present at these is important. But what do you want to leave our listeners with and folks who may want to get involved with the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I did want to just make sure everyone understood that
this year, if you're testifying at any of these hearings, it will be virtual. You don't have to go down to the Wilson Building, and it would be on a virtual platform that you can either call in, or if you have video, you can do it by video. So it's a lot easier this year in that regard. So definitely don't feel like anything should stop you from going ahead and trying to get your voice heard by the council, and definitely recommend signing up for this budget, senior budget here, seminar or whatever it is called from the mayor tomorrow, and raise this issue about the grandparent subsidy. There's no reason there should be a waiting list for this program, and there's no reason money should be taken from this program to pay other programs. This is a very important program. It makes a difference in the lives of kinship families, of the children that are going to be the next generation of leaders in our city. Let's make sure we have an opportunity to make sure that we support these children and make sure they have a better tomorrow. Let's make sure this happens. Stephanie, did you have anything to leave us with?
Sure. I just want people to know how important it is for council members to be able to put a face to the programs that they're funding, to see the people that are actually helped by them. There are real people that are falling between bureaucratic cracks. Before, when there was just the grandparent subsidy, if you were a child and you were being cared for by a grandmother or a great aunt or a great uncle or a great grandmother or a great grandfather, you could get this subsidy. But if you were being cared for by an aunt or your older sibling, you couldn't get it. And that didn't make sense. Those kids were falling through the cracks. So we advocated for it, and we got the subsidy expanded to other relative caregivers too. So it didn't make any difference if you were being cared for by a great aunt or by an aunt. But we thought we had plugged that hole, but now the hole's opened up again. Only this time, if you're being cared for by an aunt, there's funding in your program. But if you're being cared for by a great aunt, there's no funding in your program. And that makes absolutely no sense. There's real kids that are falling through these cracks, and the council needs to know that if you are a child that needs help, it shouldn't matter if you're being cared for by your aunt or your great aunt, whether or not you get funding.
That's right. Well, thank you once again, both of you, for the work that you're doing. We want to make sure that, you know, all of our children are supported, and this is a subset of young people and caregivers that definitely need some support. So, thank you both once again for the great information you've shared this afternoon. And we, you know, we hope that, everything goes the right way, and the city council or city government sees that, you know, they need to step up and support the need that's out there, with ensuring that, you know, grandparents, relatives are able to do this great service like Michelle. And I would imagine the hundreds of relative caregivers you all engage with every year. So thank you both so much for being on the radio show with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks
Take
for
care.
Having us.
Thank
Have
you.
A great
yes,
day.
Both. Thank you. And we'll talk soon. Look forward to meeting you in person. This is a weird thing about doing these radio shows remotely now, is that I don't get to see the faces and interact with the human beings on that level. So look forward to meeting you both in person at some point.
We look forward to that too.
Take care and continue doing great work.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Folks, that's about it here this Tuesday afternoon for Taking Action. Make sure to tune in every Tuesday, 1 to 2 p.m. Stay tuned. We've got the news coming up in just a couple of seconds, I would imagine. And then you've got the Inside Out Collective coming up after that. And let me just remind folks, you know, there are these mayor budget forums that are coming up. There's one tomorrow that's designated for senior budget engagement, but then there's a couple more happening on the 16th, the 18th, and the 20th of this month, all at various times. but I'm sure if you search Mayor Muriel Bowser 2021 budget engagement forum, you'll get a little more details and how to register. It's really, really important that folks step up and raise up the critical issues that we all fight for. So thank you once again for tuning in. Let me leave you here with the news. We will catch you next Tuesday. Peace.
And you're tuned to WPFW at 89.3 FM.
Representing 100% of the 99.
This is a new generation.
Organized is the new sex.
Also visit WPFWFM.org.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amar Evering with some brief news headlines. The Senate's impeachment trial of Donald Trump began today at 1 p.m. According to rules agreed upon by Senate leaders, up to 4 hours are equally divided between the impeachment managers and the president's counsel to debate the constitutionality of the trial. After the arguments, the Senate votes on the constitutionality question. The threshold to pass is a simple majority of 51 votes. If the trial is deemed constitutional, the Senate will proceed up to 16 hours per side to present their case beginning at noon Eastern Time on Wednesday. Coronavirus has infected over 27 million and killed over 465,000 people in the United States alone. Globally, there have been nearly 106 million confirmed cases and over 2.3 million deaths. Newly released emails written by a former Trump administration official reveal a focused action to slow down coronavirus testing in the U.S. in an effort to meet Trump's demand to make the numbers of cases look smaller. Oversight Committee Chairman Representative James Clyburn sent letters to White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain and Acting Health and Human Services Secretary Norris Cochran, citing an internal HHS email that Clyburn says includes details of an effort to end testing of asymptomatic infections. Clyburn says the Trump administration changed the guidance for the explicit purpose of reducing testing and allowing the virus to spread while quickly reopening the economy. Clyburn says the committee has requested more documents from the CDC and other agencies to, quote, understand the full scope and impact of efforts by the Trump White House to suppress coronavirus testing. House Democrats rejected a Republican proposal to cut off new $1,400 stimulus checks from individuals earning over $50,000 per year and families earning over $100,000. Though the Democrats' bill also establishes an income threshold for direct payments, it offers twice what the GOP has proposed. Under the Democratic plan, individuals earning below $75,000 a year would receive a full check, and payments would taper off for those earning between $75,000 and $100,000. Joint filers together earning less than $150,000 qualify for full checks. The fight to reopen schools across the nation continues today in Chicago, where its teachers' union is voting on a proposal from the district that would bring students back to classrooms as early as this week. The Chicago Teachers Union House of Delegates voted Monday night to send the tentative agreement to their full rank and file membership for a vote. Results will be known by Wednesday. If approved, students, teachers, and staff will have a staggered return to their physical classrooms beginning this week. Those returning first will have priority access to available vaccines that are being set aside for teachers. In related news, Chicago Teachers Union President Emerita Karen Lewis joined the ancestors yesterday. Karen Lewis helped spearhead the revitalization of the Chicago Teachers Union, helping lead over 25,000 educators in a historic strike that paved the way for a wave of teachers' actions years later. CTU released a statement expressing condolences for her husband and surviving family and described President Emerita Lewis as a, quote, fierce advocate who, quote, bowed to no one and gave strength to tens of thousands of Chicago Teachers Union educators who followed her lead and who live by her principles to this day. Rest in power, Karen Lewis. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 50 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, it's 33 degrees and cloudy with a chance of snow. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering.